My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs Dispatch, our monthly topics and Q&A and episode announcement and listener response and Thinking Gwen episode.
Yeah, we do a bunch of stuff in these. I never know how to follow up what Gary says. But yeah, we're going to be reading your responses to the spooky games, horror stuff. Oh. Gary, it feels like a million years ago that I played those.
it does not feel current. Weird, you know, I've been enjoying this Halloween. I love spooky times. Mm-hmm. This is a cliche observation. You don't have to stop doing spooky stuff just because it's not October and I never do, you know? So it doesn't feel that strong to me this year.
No. It never feels very strong to me because I'm always watching horror movies and I'm always playing horror games.
Yeah.
Like,
you gotta have contrast for.
Yeah. Spooky month is every month for me. Every month is spooky month.
To feel anything. Yeah. Let's answer some questions. We got a lot of game responses.
We do. Yeah. I will get us started here with Alex, who asks, do y'all think there is any link between the rise of battle royale / extraction shooters and the general erosion of the social contract and the overall decline of our society, considering the genres are every man for themselves and often encourage deception and other antisocial behaviors? Love the network and thanks for all you do. Thank you, Alex.
Hey, thanks, Alex. Sure. Yeah. Your pop culture reflects anxieties, all that stuff has been going on forever. Mm-hmm. You know, like there have been a lot of death games, and battle royale kind of things. People, you know, it basically pop culture will reflect fears.
Yes.
In every facet, you know, so I don't know to what degree.
Right. You know, I don't know that it's solely. Yeah. New genres happen. And once one slot machine starts paying out, everybody wants to play it.
Yeah. Everyone goes and plays Barney.
Like, yeah.
You know, and PUBG was Barney.
Yeah.
You know, so if it's not that, it's capitalism. It's one of the bad things.
Yeah. The only thing that's close to an extraction shooter that I played that I liked was, it's a game that's in early access called The Forever Winter, which is really neat. It's like Battlefield stealth. You're like going in and trying to get resources in the middle of like a fight that is going on between like factions and stuff. And it's team. Like you can go in as four people, but like you're not competing with each other. It's like it's better for us if we all get out of here alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something about playing a video game against another person kills it for me.
Yeah.
Like I would love to play that against a computer.
Mm-hmm.
I like computer.
Yeah. Computer's good.
I love computer. Yeah. Friend of the show, Doug, says, I saw that the major concert hall near me would soon host a symphonic performance of the music from The Witcher. If there's a game score that you'd like to see given the full orchestra treatment, what would it be and why?
The full orchestra treatment is rough.
Yeah, I don't like the full orchestra treatment.
Yeah.
In a general sense. Like, I like beeps and boops more.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to video games live.
Yeah, you have.
Which is this, but for general video games. It was a very, thoughtful thing from an ex-girlfriend for a surprise.
Uh-huh.
And like, you like video games. And what it meant was, love theme from Halo 2. it was all Hans Zimmer swells.
Yeah.
You know, the entire time. Like, I recognized Zelda. And then they played a little bit of the Mario 1-1 theme.
Yeah.
But I didn't dig it that much. I do love video game music. I would love to see, a concert of here's the thing I want to see. Give me a Katamari concert.
Yeah.
All those bands and all those different configurations. Give me a live arrangement of the Katamari Damacy soundtrack.
You know, I would really love if they're you've seen footage of those, but live performances of Rhythm Heaven shit. If I could have gone to those, that would have been amazing.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah. I hear the Stardew live is actually pretty good. mm-hmm. just from a few people who've gone to it. But yeah, like a lot of stuff is there's a fun anecdote about something like this related to Silent Hill soundtracks in the responses for that. But also, like, I don't know, going to an Air Power concert where they just did like, yeah, this is our Disco Elysium suite, and
yeah.
did those songs. That'd be cool. Sea Power, sorry. I'm unsure. I'm unsure which theater.
Yeah. Oops. You got 2/3 of the Centurions named. British Land Power.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. I thought that was the same band under different names.
Yeah.
I know.
What does Drew say?
Drew says, "Hi, G and K. On a recent Real Lich Hours episode, you mentioned that the problem with modded content is that you're never quite sure what's a glitch and what's actually a part of the additional gameplay. It got me thinking about glitches in general and whether you'd ever confused a glitch with just bad game design or vice versa. I remember playing through Fallout New Vegas the first time and doing the Cannibal Hotel questline. I got invited to the sauna to speak to a guy about what's really going on here. But as soon as I walked in, some random NPCs burst through the door, fists raised, and immediately started fighting me and the guy. I assumed I had just stolen something 5 hours ago, and they had only just caught up to me after being stuck on a door or something, so I reloaded the game to try it again. Turns out that's actually part of the storyline, but the really janky gameplay of Fallout New Vegas, in general, convinced me that it was just another in the long line of glitches that game had on release. Still, the best Fallout game, though, IMO. Thanks as always for all the work you do. Thank you.
Thanks, Drew.
Yeah.
I think that the not knowing is real. I can't think of a specific example.
Yeah.
You know, that's a cool story, and no court would convict you for thinking that New Vegas had fucked up. Mm-hmm. It's a very specific thing to have happen in a game. I don't have like ready example for it.
Yeah. I can answer a different version of this question, but not the question as asked. It was like, oh, like when did you have a glitch that you thought was something intentional they had done that was really cool?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. And then sometimes those get, you know, ported in.
Yeah.
You know, like it's on TV Tropes as ascended glitch.
Yeah.
The thing, you know? So, by the way, if you're getting frustrated by TV Tropes asking for money to turn off your ad block, and then you turn off your ad block and it still does it, I turned off my ad block and switched to desktop mode on my iPad, and it worked fine.
Okay.
So yeah. I found a sneak.
God, the ads on that site are really fucking irritating because they reload constantly and you lose your place.
That's exactly the problem. Everyone who has a website, I will fucking turn off my ad blocker if you get your ads in order.
Yeah.
Like they have to stop resetting my browser.
Please.
Like, and trying to make me quit taking control of my computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I would not want to block those ads. I can just scroll past them if they were not turning my phone into something that disobeyed me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Everyone should be paid for the work, but like you have to, you know, user experience is important too.
Yeah, but also like the volunteers who maintain that place aren't getting paid.
that's true too. Yeah, it's bull. It's some bullshit.
Yeah.
Luke says, "Howdy, partners. On the Bigfoot Abject Suffering, a throwaway gag was made about dudes who are too into guns. I've been thinking about these kind of guys a lot recently as a counterpoint to annoying, you're 33, 35. Why do you still play video games? Why is a grown man buying Transformers discourse? Do you think if men felt more free to just enjoy what they enjoy, it would keep more of them away from the pipelines?
Why would a grown man care about graphics?
Yeah. Graphics.
No. Sorry, if you care about graphics, you're gay. It's just there.
Yeah. I learned that from GamePro. Looking at that full hair razor in the eyeball he was giving me. Uh-huh. It was a real meet me in the GamePro bathroom. Kind of high full hair razor to get a full hair razor from him. Probably toxic masculinity and like, we don't treat, you know, everyone suffers from the patriarchy in a real way.
Yeah.
You know, in masculine socialization is a crime that happens to people.
Like, yeah.
It sucks.
I see being a gun guy. I see that particular pipeline as something that is not mutually exclusive with being a video game guy. And more and more, like if you look at, you know, school shooters and stuff, they're trying to get weapons that are like Call of Duty or whatever, you know, like it's a definite thing. I don't know that being more open about liking games or like making it more acceptable to like games,
yes,
you know, in a, like that feels like a throwback to like 2014, you know, the girls and the gays are coming to take away something that we suffered for.
I was just going to say, like, if I knew how to solve it, I would solve it. Like, it'd be awesome if I knew the answer. That might help, but like, it's a really deep problem.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back a long time. So I don't know. Not going to be solved in my lifetime.
Yeah. I generally agree that if more people were just open about what they were into, and it was more acceptable to be into a wider array of things, more people would be happy.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
And maybe they would shoot people less.
Hopefully.
If they were happier.
Yeah.
It's not a happy thing you do when you shoot somebody.
These are not happy times. These are sad times.
They seem really sad. Like whenever they show the shooter, like they're not just like grinning ear to ear.
No.
You know? Yeah. They're having a bad time. You know, not having sympathy for them. I'm just saying like, you know, it's not a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Troy writes, "Hello, Kay and Gary. I'm curious to know if either of you invert the vertical y-axis controls in your first-person shooters. Is your preference consistent for all video games, or are there some that you switch it up for? Also, are there really people who invert the horizontal controls? P.S. It would be great if Gwen could drill into the episode and let us know her preference too. Whenever she does that, it cracks me up. No worries if not. Just thought I would ask." I'll leave that up to Gwen.
"When I push up on the controller, the character should look up towards the sky."
Yeah, up to Gwen. So this is going to make me sound very ignorant. Depending on the game, like if I'm controlling a vehicle or not, this depends. And I don't quite remember which one I do. I flip it if it feels wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the end.
I have to flip it real soon because if I play it in the one that feels wrong for too long, then flipping it will not make a difference for me.
Yeah, it makes it feel right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something I feel, this is just a binary thing, inverted or not. It feels like something I should just be able to say yes or no, but no.
And it's like... because I do the, like, if I'm flying, obviously to me it would, you know, inverted makes way more sense, but like this is like a Oliver Sacks like neuroscience kind of thing, and like I've heard it described as like, do you feel like you are controlling the front of the camera or the back of the camera based on your presses, and also like if it's first person, do you think of it as moving the back of the head or the front of the head? So like first person, I do not play inverted. Third person generally, but it really does just depend on the feel.
This next one in life sounds weird for me to ask you, but I'm gonna do it.
Okay.
Fran says, "Skip this if it's too personal or you just don't feel like answering. Okay. How did you know you were trans? As somebody who is currently identifies as non-binary, I occasionally wonder if I am as well."
It is too long. I would not say it's too personal. And also I cannot speak to somebody who has already taken the step to identifying as non-binary, to speak to whether they believe that they are, binary trans. As for how I knew, I don't know. That's the part that's a little bit too long to go into. It is just something that I had a feeling about for a very long time. And then one day I was like, I am. So that is supremely unhelpful, but I don't know if I can give an example or advice that would be applicable.
Advice would be, it feels weird to me.
Yeah.
To provide advice. There are resources and such.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are many, many things. When you told me about it, I read the Dysphoria Bible thing online, and that had a lot of like insight stuff. Cause I was just curious, like what you're going through.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing I've always said is that, like, I think that the position of cis is you don't think about it.
Yeah.
Like exclusively, like it's not like I'm not walking around going like rah, rah, love having a dick. This rules. Love being man. I just don't think about it. It's not even a thing. And like, the idea of thinking about gender really at all for myself feels, you know, like strange behavior. Like it doesn't occur to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? So if you think about it, then you've got that work to do. And I think that like the, you were going to want to like reach out and read.
Yeah.
You know,
the thing that has come up in, you know, trans communities that I've been a part of, mostly anonymously, but just is just like, oh, well, try it out, you know, try the pronoun, try, you know, dressing, see how it feels. Like a lot of times if you are in a state of questioning, doing that feels terrifying for very obvious reasons. But if you break down that barrier and it feels good, I don't know. That yeah. might speak more to you. The gender dysphoria Bible is genderdysphoria.fyi. There's some stuff in there that's kind of but it's a good enough place to start. Also, I don't want to assume you haven't gone to that, but I have never considered being non-binary, so it is hard for me to speak to that perspective.
Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck. Andre writes, I teach in a large public high school, over 2,000 students, and part of my contract this year requires 45 minutes patrolling the halls like a mall cop with a radio, demanding hall passes and, I swear this is true, sniffing bathrooms for what my admin calls nefarious odors, i.e. vaping.
It's like a commercial, like they're using a goblin is in there smoking a big like cartoon J. And
I love teaching, but I hate everything about this duty. In your podcast, particularly Abject Suffering, have seen me through countless laps around the building and its many, many toilets. My questions then. One, what is the most miserable or distasteful thing people have told you they do while listening to your shows? And two, what unhappy jobs have you both personally made more bearable by listening to podcasts? Genuine thanks to two of the hardest working folks in podcasting. Thank you.
Thank you. One time somebody told me that even though most of the time their job was being a teacher, sometimes they had to patrol the school.
Yeah.
For nefarious odors.
Smelling the bathrooms on purpose.
Smelling the bathrooms on purpose that kids use.
Uh-huh.
And that was pretty rough.
It was really rough.
That's a tough thing to have to do while you're listening to a show.
Hey, Andre, I'm really sorry. I think you won. Like yeah, there's all kinds of like gross, honest work to do. And I'm not calling, doing dishonest. It is an unreasonable thing that is being asked of you. But if somebody said, yeah, I listened to your podcast while I empty septic tanks, I was like, rock on, man.
Yeah. And everyone, you know, sometimes like, people in the army, mm-hmm. you know, happen soldiers. I had a thought. Do you think there's anybody, because you know how every once in a while somebody who hates our politics will listen anyway because they just were just so goddamn good. Mm-hmm. And it's very funny. They'll leave like a review to that effect.
Yeah.
You think we got any ICE listeners?
I hope not.
Yeah. It'd be weird.
Yeah.
You know? But it's just like, man, what if somebody's just like cruising by their ICE shift?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm helping them out. I'm not worried about this. I don't need anyone to like roll their eyes so hard they fucking die. And, you know, me, I don't feel guilty about it. It's just an errant thought I had.
Mm-hmm.
Like, huh.
Yeah. There's a rule for this. It's the Olivia Hill rule. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-mm.
It's like a thing in tabletop spaces. It's something that's put in front of some books. If you're a fascist, you're not welcome to play this game. It is against the rules. If you're reading this and thinking you just call everyone you disagree with a fascist, then you're probably a fascist or incapable of drawing inferences from context and acknowledging a dangerous political climate that causes oppressed people to be hyperbolic. Don't play this game. Heal yourself. Grow, learn, watch some Mr. Rogers Neighborhood or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Feel that way about ICE. Fix your heart.
Now we gotta start saying that at the beginning of podcast.
Oh gosh, the whole thing. That's forever to read. Yeah. I'm sorry that your employer is making you do that. That is a ridiculous thing for somebody who is probably really stretched thin trying to teach that many students. Does not need thrown onto their workload. Probably that period could go to prep, but instead you are made into a prison guard.
If you ever want to quit, wait for a kid to take like an absolutely rowdy shit and then tell your boss like, hey, there's a really nefarious odor in there and then send your boss in.
You got to go quick.
You got to quick. It's clearing. I'm not totally sure. It might be fentanyl. And then just have him go up there and just like absolutely inhale the ass. Eric asks, if you had to plan a heist, what do you think you could successfully burgle? And what skills did you bring to the crew?
I didn't put this in lightning round because I felt like it was a little bit longer than lightning round, but also it can be lightning round length if we want.
Yeah. What can I successfully burgle? I think about this more than you might think. Mm-hmm. When I go to bed, the way that I go to sleep and shut my brain down is fantasizing.
Yeah.
About things. A lot of times it's like, what if I was a vampire? What kind of cool shit would I do? Mm-hmm. What if I had a keytar that could stop time? You know, I don't know. It'd be pretty sick. And it's what shuts down my brain. So yeah. A lot of times these involve burgling, mm-hmm. you know, and things. In terms of what I could actually burgle, though, I'd need a keytar that could stop time. I don't think in real life I could do it.
No, you know? No. It would have to be a social engineering thing. Right. Like it. Yeah. I think about my skills. I can't do anything practical. So I would have to be the face or the distraction.
I could be a distraction pretty well.
Yeah.
I'm bad at lying and stuff. So I could be a distraction. But like if I had to like pretend, uh-huh. you know, I couldn't do what Kubi does in Breaking Bad at the train heist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like those guys would be like, we're just going to fucking push it. And I'd be like, well, I wish you wouldn't. Say, oh, an odd thing to say, and I'd say, well, fuck, okay.
Yeah, no, would definitely give up the game, would definitely crack under pressure, so it'd have to be relatively low stakes.
I oftentimes think of something as like, oh, I could steal this if I wanted to.
Yes.
Like I don't, but it just makes me think like, oh, you know, this should be more secure. But
how many
times big
how many times at PRGE did we say, oh, like we should heist that.
Yes.
Like, or just, I'm really surprised nobody's taken that.
Yeah.
You know?
And we're not talking about like vendors, individual games, like their copy of Dragon Quest 7 or something. We're talking about priceless Nintendo power art.
Yes.
You know, things like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I could probably successfully orchestrate a heist on a Burger King.
Yeah. Yeah, cameras everywhere now, though.
That's the thing, right?
Really difficult. Like, everyone has a Ring camera. Everything is filmed. So, yeah, I don't know how to get around that.
Did you know that the average bank robbery take is less than $5,000?
I did know that.
Yeah. I just found that out.
I feel like at that rate, you should just let them get away with it. Like, that is basically factory wages for the amount of work they're putting in.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
it's like, oh, they're going to get caught. Like, oh, for God's sake, hand over whatever's in your drawer. Like, yeah. do whatever it takes not to get you or anybody killed. It'll probably get you fired, but.
Yeah, I'm not, like, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, you ever worked a job where somebody's like, listen, if we get robbed, I'm going to need you to step up. Like, somebody puts a gun in your face, I'm going to need you to defend the Road Ranger line of convenience stores. Like, what? I'm not a guard, you know?
Yeah, I'm here to take money for this. How it walks out the door is not my concern.
Yeah, that doesn't mean like necessarily turning like a blind eye to everything, right? Like,
yeah.
We're in a convenience store and people are stealing from it. I'm not saying you know, you don't say something. But mm-hmm. somebody has a gun.
Yeah.
It's kind of a real clear escalation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's only if you're working that you wouldn't turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah. If you're shopping there, absolutely. You turn a blind eye. You didn't see
it. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't turn yourself into a cop.
Nope.
God, society only let Andre's really... boss do that.
Trying to avoid that guy. Yeah. Let's see. Going down to media questions. We have Joel who says, this is an unfilmable / general media question. I've really started enjoying non-US horror more and more recently. Your The Wailings and When Evil Lurks and whatnot. There's a fun unpredictability to not knowing other cultural touchstones and tropes and getting a perspective into what other people and places find spooky and where the commonalities lie. My question is, though, and maybe this, appeals more broadly to games and music as well, but is there some undercurrent there that is problematic, exoticizing another culture just for the sake of itself? Is this a terminally online way to think about this? Where is the line with appreciation and just seeing it as novelty? Does it matter? As a ranking and or less serious line of questioning, what do you think are the worst smelling areas in games? What seems to be the most pleasant zone or world to set up a shack in? There we go. So that's two unrelated questions. I kind of don't care why you're exposing yourself to other cultures' stuff. I think that is just broadly good. And if it appeals to you for a reason that feels like it's icky, I cannot be the judge of it. I don't think.
If you feel icky, that's information.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. I think that it is, it does, there is something there. I think it does kind of suck to just be like, you know, simping for a culture feels bad to me.
Yeah.
Regardless of the culture. Mm-hmm. Exposing yourself, like, but also at the same time, it's the paradox, because we can't pretend that, you know, art from a certain culture doesn't have some commonalities, or else it mm-hmm. wouldn't make it the thing it is, right? And maybe those aspects are just things that vibe with you.
Yeah.
You know, you like those things. So like, the answer is, this is too online.
Yeah.
Like, you are worrying about something that shouldn't be worried about. If you feel icky about it though, like mm-hmm. that's worth thinking about.
Also, if you're stopping to ask the question, you're probably self-aware enough to be trusted with DVDs that are imported or whatever. Yeah. You don't want to veer too far into Orientalism, right?
Yeah. Of any stripe. That tends to be, you know, the most, but it's a thing where like it's important, the reasons why. Like, if you just mm-hmm. like it, and that's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very easy to become, yeah, I don't know, like, grody.
Yeah.
Around it, I think.
The way I think about it is, like, you can have, like, a girlfriend of a different race, and it's fine. That is not automatically fetishizing, right?
No, but, like, seeking a girlfriend of a different race.
Yes.
Then it crosses a weird line to me. Like, that's strange, mm-hmm. you know? Because then it's like, maybe you're looking at those, you know, you're making some assumptions about cultural values.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's fraught for a lot of people. Yeah. And maybe that was a bad example.
Complicated question, but it's more like in real life, I don't think this matters.
Yeah.
If you have a shelf full of like Japanese horror DVDs, nobody's going to care. Mm-hmm. And they shouldn't. If they do, they're a weirdo.
Yeah. You know, I've got a bunch of horror manga. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. If it doesn't matter. In terms of best and worst smelling areas, like all the worst smelling areas are all the Dark Souls swamps and shit. You know, the Demon Souls, mm-hmm. you know, that one's literally like human shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's pretty bad.
Most pleasant zone or world to set up a shack in. I don't know. I'm pretty staunch by Majula.
Yeah. Majula would be very nice. It's got a nice quality of light.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might be good to have something with some infrastructure, but you don't want to be too busy.
Yeah.
You know, that's tricky too. Like Majula has no transit.
Yeah. but you can cross an entire... Oh, whoops. I had a spill. Sorry. Not a big one. It's fine. Yeah. but you can cross an entire continent like in the span of riding a little elevator.
You can't buy a grocery, though.
Okay.
Yeah. you can't eat there. So it's got, you know, I'm just saying that like you don't want to be really crowded, but maybe a city would be good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, or a town. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Max says, "Hey folks, for the Halloween season, I've been making my way through the TV show Midnight Mass again, this time with my partner. I was wondering what your thoughts on Mike Flanagan are, if you have any. Is there hope for his Dark Tower adaptation will be worth watching, or did we not learn our lesson hard enough the first time? Overdue shout out to Radio Free Midworld for getting me into the books and honestly back into reading in general. Thank you, Kay. Long days and pleasant nights."
Yes. I've not seen like Mike Flanagan's like Netflix series, like never watched Midnight Mass or any of the other ones. They've been recommended to me a lot. Mm-hmm. It's literally just my new TV show aversion that's like kept me away from them. His Stephen King adaptations are good. Gerald's Game is good. And I like Dr. Sleep quite a bit. Mm. Dr. Sleep is actually the best Dark Tower movie. Okay. Yeah, is saying something. But yeah, I'm not a Ginnam. As far as like, you know, horror directors that have taken on King, he's no Darabont to me. Mm-hmm. But it is hard to be a Darabont. And I don't know. I am inherently skeptical of any effort to adapt The Dark Tower, let alone into film. I don't know if it's a TV show that he's doing. Honestly, I've not paid attention to it because I got burned so hard the first time.
Yeah. Dark Tower pretty big.
Dark Tower big is the thing.
Yeah. I've not watched any of this guy's stuff. I was really compelled by the trailers for the Fall of the House of Usher or the House mm-hmm. of Usher show, but never ended up watching it. Heard really good things about Midnight Mass. Have not watched it. Mm-hmm. One thing about being married is I tend to watch shows with my wife. So mm-hmm. it's democratic.
Yeah.
We both have to be interested. So it's on the eventual list, perhaps, mm-hmm. you know, but I also have the new TV version thing. So I get it.
Yeah.
What does Bud Dink say? Or Donk say over here.
This is Bud Dink. This is a Patreon user whose profile picture is Bud Dink from Doug, the nice. Very expensive guy, which is very fun. But Bud Dink says, hey there. On a recent episode of Guppy, I think, Gary had mentioned something along the lines of audio-only podcast today not being, quote, possible, at least in terms of starting out. I don't disagree, but I was wondering if you two might expand on that idea. Why you think it is? Why you think that is? Pros and cons, whatever comes to the old noggin. I personally don't like video podcasts at all, though I have my own audio-only show, so I am biased probably. Appreciate you both.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I possibly hyperbole when I say not possible. I think what I was alluding to is that the mediums on which people are blowing up right now are not audio only generally. New podcasts that are being launched are either like very, very small, just indie, that kind of thing still happens, or they're being launched by huge network kind of things. It's like, Will Ferrell's new podcast, shit like that.
Yeah.
That comes through. And then like people you never fucking heard of in your life, we went and watched a movie when you're in town, Kay, and they had the lady for Newbie, the pre-movie ads, like it was like, and see me on my podcast. And like, who the hell is this?
This is why nobody takes AOL Blast seriously.
It's 100% why nobody takes AOL Blast seriously into bullshit. So I think just starting a podcast now independently would be very difficult and harder than starting a YouTube or a TikTok. Or something in another medium was, what I was alluding to.
Go to a convention and compare the lengths of the lines for our panel versus, I don't know, the N-word gamer or something.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go to a panel, to a place that hosted the N-word gamer, but.
Yeah. We're using that as a insert peanut butter boy or a YouTuber.
Yeah, YouTube streamer, screamer kind of person.
Yeah. Just,
there seems to be more interest in that. And I think that that's just a matter of saturation. But also, I don't think it would be super easy to get started on video either.
No. It's hard regardless.
Yeah.
Like, there's no universe in which we didn't win a lottery.
Yeah.
It's very difficult, any kind of creative thing. But right now, I just feel like the winds are moving somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Something I think about a lot is, because you had mentioned music and games, I think about Pavement having their biggest hit of all time being because, a B-side that got picked up from their least popular album.
Oh, because Cut Your Hair? really? What?
Harness Your Hopes.
Oh, shit. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. They took off on a TikTok and they ended up releasing a video for it, making a single. And it's a tossed off motherfucking song. A lot of, Pavement songs are tossed off. What's great about them, but it's really weird. One of the weirdest songs to get huge.
Do you want to hear something really weird? Hmm. I was talking with my niece because I had heard about something called the Gen Z stare. And I was like, hey, is this actually a thing? Because like all I've seen is like old people ranting about it. She's like, yeah, no, it's absolutely a thing. She sent me a bunch of videos. Several of them, like the song that was put under them was fucking Lover You Should Have Come Over by Jeff Buckley.
That's real weird. Mixtape staple from 2003.
Yeah. And it's actually like, hey, this is a really good song. It has nothing to do with this. Is this all over TikTok? She's like, yeah, it's everywhere.
It's real weird. Yeah. The drummer guy who plays drummer in my band has kids, and he was saying that the kids are getting into Scatman.
Mm.
And it's like pretty into that. They'll just start stinging it, ironically out and everything. Yeah. And it just, I don't know. Yeah, it's real fucking weird. TikTok does weird shit.
That's like really cyclical because like Scatman's last big push was 20 years ago with like World of Warcraft videos.
Yeah.
Like Google video shit. So,
Yeah. It's odd. I don't understand the new media.
Nope. I'm happy we have what we have.
Yeah, I'm really happy we got it when we did and we have the audience we do. We would like to have a bigger audience obviously and stuff, but not so much that we're going to trend chase because we'd be bad at it and it would be embarrassing.
You can tell when somebody's heart isn't in it, at least for me. I can tell
when the pivot to video would be difficult.
Yeah.
Jake says, I love how all your podcasts are on Patreon now. I've been checking out a bunch of them that I didn't know existed. I really enjoy all the diversity of the intro music for different podcasts and how it seems to perfectly fit the theme of the show. That being said, you all got me into Retronauts and that intro slaps. Is there any other non-Duckfeed podcast intro music that you like?
Uh, good.
I'm an old head and like the old Retronauts music, mm-hmm. which was mid-tempo as shit.
Uh-huh. Like,
it did not get you psyched. It got you like prepared to sit down. You know, enjoy a podcast.
Yeah. I agree. I know that, yeah. You know, they got,
I like the new one too. Like the Monoguchi one. Clearly, it's a really funny anecdote. When they did that, I remember Bob saying something like, you know, we thought about, you know, how we get this done. And it turns out you can just pay people to do stuff. Like they just paid them to make the theme song.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like, just like historically podcasts I've listened to. All that I have now is my like political shit. The intro to Knowledge Fight is really good. It is somebody who does similar kinds of kind of remix stuff for other podcasts that I listen to. The guy's name is DJ Danarchy. Mm-hmm. Who takes like clips of the things that are being talked about, not from the show itself, but like it's all Alex Jones news. Shit on Knowledge Fight. Yeah. Yeah. And puts together just like really fun and catchy, like hook filled remix kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. There's that. And then Majority Report starts with a cover of Pressure Drop by The Clash. Mm-hmm. And that's a good song. And I like it. It's like a good start to that every time I listen to that.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for this. I listen to fewer podcasts.
Yeah,
than I used to. I listen to YouTube more at this point, just because a lot of stuff that I get there, and I don't do that often.
Yeah.
So.
Show question here. Michael says, for Gary, aggro, control, combo, or mid range.
This is about Magic: The Gathering. I don't actively play. When I did play, I liked playing mid range.
Okay.
Like I want time to do stuff. I'm bad at combo. I'm not like I don't always have enough of a knowledge base. And now the only thing I really do is I play on that fake Chandelar and I do sealed decks. I pick an era of Magic I'm nostalgic for and say, give me six of these. And I make a deck and play the computer a few times and have a nice time. But that's the extent of my Magicking right now.
Yeah. Okay. Show question. Have either of you considered covering written media for Adaptation Decay? I thought of this while reading The Hike by Drew McGarry, former Deadspin/Gawker media columnist. It is a novel explicitly inspired by adventure games, and I kept thinking while reading that it would make a great entry for the podcast. As always, thanks for all you do, and they say other nice stuff. Thank you.
No, thank you, Michael.
Yeah.
The trick is always just time in to output.
Yeah.
Adaptation Decay is a premium show. It's for $10 and up. We love that show and we like finding stuff for it and everything. We want to make sure it's good. Mm-hmm. I don't want to come off as lazy, you know, when I say this, but like sometimes unless we're really driven to read a book, like in our spare time, it's a lot of work to prep.
Yeah.
And I would say this would be, you take notes on that show, but I imagine a little bit difficult to take notes on.
And make them concise. Yeah. In the past, what I've done, you know, when I did Radio Free Midworld is I read it on Kindle and then highlight and then go in and look at the highlights and just make an outline based on that. It's actually not that big of a deal.
I mean, kind of thinking in terms of length, right? Because on that show, you would cover books over multiple episodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, I didn't listen to that. I'm not a King guy, but I don't know how zoomed in.
Yeah,
that show was.
It was like chapters, but the chapters are really long in those too.
Yeah.
So, it seems like a fun challenge. Like I've wanted to cover Wolf and White Van on that for a long time. John Darnielle novel that came out 10 years roughly ago. It's what Gary said. We've also thought about like, hey, wouldn't it be funny to do like Resident Evil, Caliban Cove, like the Rebecca fanfic?
I gotta know what happens in Caliban Cove.
I have to know what happens in Caliban Cove.
I love Caliban Cove.
But that is a similar like length or quality issue. Like at the end of the day, you're still reading Caliban Cove.
Yeah. And it might be, I don't have something that, and this is just, you know, I'm not speaking for you or anybody else. I don't have the like, can read something bad for fun gene anymore.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I had a weird amount of time to kill and picked up my novelization of Baldur's Gate 1.
Yep.
And it was like, it was kind of funny, you know, but then I just had this thought of like, I can read something that's actually funny.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to, I could just read like Incarcerat. I could read the Garth Marenghi book I haven't read yet and have a great time, but I don't want to do this. My reading time is too limited.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
such a sometimes treat.
Yeah. And I guess I don't, you know, I wish I read more like everybody. Same. Yeah. I don't read all that often. Moving on to the lightning round before we get to our topic, Benjamin says, how do you like to dress a hot dog? Just had a classic New York style and an Oktoberfest, both great in different ways.
My opinion on this is will get me shot. Mm-hmm. I just like ketchup, just a little bit of ketchup on that bad boy.
That is a shootable opinion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like all styles of hot dog. That should also get me shot. It's a Quisling answer. but I've never had like a hot dog style I don't like.
Okay.
So real into a Coney dog, real into a Chicago dog, real into a New York dog.
Coney dog's really good. If that's an option, I'll take that.
Yeah, take Coney dog. You could have avoided getting shot. Right?
A Coney dog feels like such a different thing, though. That's like a meal with a snack on it.
It is a dish. It does feel like something like they would serve you in Puzzle Agent. little Puzzle Agent shout out there.
Yeah. For everybody. Let's see here. Christian writes, what's something you're looking forward to in the coming year?
If the thing doesn't happen, the thing would be great. Mm-hmm. Other than that, me and my wife are going on our third anniversary trip. We're going to go down to San Francisco.
Oh, dang.
Which is going to be fun. I'm really excited specifically to show her Museum Mécanique. She loves old-timey, like Mechanical Turk type things.
Oh, yeah, I know. She'd be in heaven there.
She'll be a pig in shit, mm-hmm. my wife. So I'm really looking forward to showing her that.
Yeah. If the thing happens, that'll be it. I've alluded to it. Looking at moving. Have not made a final decision yet, but it just makes sense to me right now. But like otherwise coming up in the next year, I don't know. I don't keep a lot of milestones out. So
no, there's you and I have very different anxiety orders, but one area of overlap is not planning for the future.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it's not a good thing, but I think it's true. I think it tends to be something that's in common with people who are depressed, at least in some of the ways that I am.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, for me, it's like, it's different now than it was before. Like before I just couldn't envision one for myself. Like everything was just like, well, if there's more time, I'll take it, but I'm not really invested.
Yeah.
But it's like, and now like, oh, well that was depression caused by just a ton of dysphoria, not liking living as me. Now I do feel hope for the future, but also it is impossible for me to plan anything living where I live.
It's like a thing that gets embedded into you.
Yes.
You know, like one of the things like I like talking to my therapist about was like, I think that a lot of the ways my childhood made me not, like the future is very uncertain. I don't know what's going to fucking happen. Mm-hmm. Even if I'm not necessarily, if I'm hopeful generally for it, like I love being alive. I want to be alive very much so.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like who knows what could happen? Fucking the house could set on fire. I don't know. Like you don't get to make those plans.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even know where you're going to live. Little guy. Yeah.
Right.
Like it's a real ingrown thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me.
Heart pattern to break as patterns are. Yeah.
Yep. Christopher says, hey, Gary and Kay, any interest or thoughts about doing a show dedicated to what we do in the shadows, akin to Best Quality Vacuum or Orb? Love that show. It would be us recounting jokes.
Yeah.
That wouldn't stop us because we are going to do the review show. We have to.
Review is also the show of a person's life falling apart or a person methodically. There we go. Thank you. Dismantling his own life. Like there is a serious drama and tragedy to that. Like Orb had jokes, but also we were talking about the references it was making in the like it as a serialized work that was interested in change. Mm-hmm. What we do in the shadows does have like overarching things, but like. Ultimately, it would be and then somebody said, "Not you, Guillermo."
Yeah, which is the name of a podcast that did that as well.
Did it? Okay.
So it's also a little bit like taking up space. Not that there couldn't be room for both. You know, we weren't the first people to do a Venture Brothers show, but the there's a little bit of space there. So I love that show. Love excuse to rewatch it, but no current plans.
Yeah.
What did Eric say?
Eric says, if you had to be isekai'd into any world, what would you pick?
That's a good question. I like being alive, as previously mentioned. So that's difficult. Most worlds you can be isekai'd into are much more dangerous.
Yeah.
Hey, Pokemon?
yeah, Pokemon seems fine. You can just live. Yeah, that is the answer. Yeah. I would do a self-insert fic with Pokemon.
Yeah. I would all of a sudden be the oldest person in the world of Pokemon. I would become a professor, a degree would just pop out of my body.
Uh-huh.
Well, shit, yeah. I guess I give Pokemons to kids.
Yeah. I'd get devoured by a Tangela or something just on a hike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just stay inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I guess that's true wherever I'd go. So Isekai loses some appeal. It's a funny idea though, getting Isekai into the world and being like, okay, where do I pay rent? And then just like living in this town and staying away from all the shit.
Yeah, no adventure for me, please. Yeah,
Dungeon Avoider Carl like stuff. Yeah. Like, you know. Jonathan says, Gary, I'm sorry for bringing this shit up. You guys see Kojima go full AI shill? I avoided that discourse, but I feel more vindicated in hating that hack starfucker. Thank you for writing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see this because I'm offline. I just want to throw this out there as a powerful advertisement for getting rid of social media.
Mm-hmm.
I don't learn about Elon Musk or Kojima.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Elon Musk's stupid fucking face since I left Blue Sky.
Yep.
Can you imagine that feeling? It's real good.
Yeah.
I didn't see this. It doesn't surprise me.
No, not at all.
Yeah. I think he is a talentless hack.
The thing that bothers me more than that is him doing like a big event in Saudi Arabia. Like, I think that was concurrent with or alongside the AI stuff. Mm. Really sucks. There are a lot of directors, people whose like work that I've liked, who are coming out and showing their asses regarding AI stuff. Yeah. And you can't defend it.
Yeah. They are. So one of the things I thought about is that they are surrounded by people who do not have boots on the ground. Like everyone around them is being like, this is fucking sick,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that changes your perception.
Yeah.
Like, I think there is like a literal bubble
mm-hmm.
of that stuff. And not that I'm not in a bubble. Like everyone I know hates all of that stuff, mm-hmm. but there probably are some people who think it might be neat. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I've never met them.
Yeah.
Like,
I overheard the most annoying. So when I was looking at a place out there in Portland, I got breakfast and a coffee at a coffee shop. And I sat next to two people who were talking very loudly about how the Democratic Party is getting a little bit too like left for them and talking about business possibilities for AI.
Sure.
Yeah.
Words don't mean anything.
Nope.
Like, yeah, that ain't true.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have hose. Like, ain't fucking true. What are you talking about, weirdos?
Yeah. No. There are those people who exist.
Yeah, they exist. I not too surprised. He will face no repercussions for it because nobody will ever not buy his stuff.
Right.
Everyone agrees with most of my criticisms. They're like, but what are you gonna do? He's kind of interesting. So
yeah,
he will succeed no matter what he does.
Yep.
Sucks.
Matthew writes, Yo-kay, are you stoked for Power Wash Sim 2? I'm counting down the days. It's going to be so relaxing.
That question is for you.
It is for me. Yeah. I don't know why I paused except to breathe.
For me to answer.
No, I literally was to take a breath. Okay. Yeah, I am stoked for more. I did a little stream of the first couple missions of that this past week. That's a Patreon thing. Just go and do a search for Power Wash Sim. It's good. I have not gotten beyond the stuff that is very much like, hey, this is a reprise of Power Wash Simulator to give you the basics. But there's nothing too huge in terms of new features in that anyway. It's just more shit to Power Wash. A little bit disappointed because my favorite version of Power Wash is the VR one. I think that's a great fit for that, actually. But still excited to kind of gum at it.
Yeah. Yardwork Simulator joke. the VR fucking Power Wash. Are you kidding me? You literally want to go on the Yardwork Simulator.
Yeah.
I am. My contribution to the entirety of Power Wash, I had only known about it. I tried the demo on Switch and it made my blood feel like it was screaming.
Okay.
Because the car, you could look at the car and the car was fucking clean.
Uh-huh.
And it kept saying, no, there's something there. And I'm like, you can't even see it.
Yeah.
It's not there. And like, no, there's a little bit of dirt. And I'm like, motherfucker, that car is clean.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me want to strangle somebody.
I can tell you what you actually do in that situation, but you're not going to be amenable.
I did it. I beat the demo. Mm-hmm. Like I know how to, I did it. It just, it sucked that it wasn't clean enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you can't perceive the dirt, it is clean enough.
the nice feature into that I like is like when you get down to like something like that, like, okay, most of it's clean, you know, something has like a little speck. There is like a little like heads up indicator that says, hey, this is the part that needs cleaning. So you can go look at it. It does get rid of that searching for the last like 1%. Yeah.
It was more just the principle of the matter for me. Like, this is fucking clean enough.
Yeah.
The world will never be perfect. This is going, that spec is going to come back the second you dry this out of the garage.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then, like, the act of playing it wasn't, I was playing on controller. I felt like I might like it a little bit more on mouse, but
yeah.
On controller, it felt a little awkward and I didn't find it relaxing.
It's a poor match for a controller, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My level of engagement for relaxation is mm-hmm. just different.
Yeah.
Matthew says, how's everyone doing? Kay, have you tried watching the Bob's Burger pseudo spinoff, The Great North? If yes, what did you think about it? Also, what are you all dressing up as for Halloween? If you aren't, what were your favorite past costumes?
So for the first one, have not watched The Great North yet. I am kind of happy being in my Bob's Burgers time loop. Mm-hmm. Maybe someday for The Great North. Yeah. I'm not really a Halloween costume gal. Never did that. At one point I went as evil me at my old mm-hmm. job when I only wore black t-shirts. I wore a white one and also an eye patch. So that was just evil me. Yeah. It was at a party that was not all work people. So it was very difficult to explain.
You, will have to change that if you move out here.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't mean you had to go all out.
No, I understand. Like, yeah, no, trust me. Now that I'm more comfortable dressing up and expressing myself, the possibilities are, you know, not endless, but wide. Seems like it would be fun to do. Just never, like, I think for me, I'm just more hard up even for like opportunities to go out to a Halloween party dressed. Yes. You know,
that's an adult problem. And that happens even to me. Like me and Liv will be like, you know, what are we going to do this year? And if we don't have anything going on, mm-hmm. like this year, we're throwing a party.
Yeah.
So we have something going on. But like, I had a coworker at my old office job when I worked at PSU who did a Halloween party and gave me an excuse. And once I no longer had that, there were years where I didn't dress up because like, not doing anything. Dressing up for whomst, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's the pandemic.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to dress up for a Zoom call. Like, that mm-hmm. doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I thought I was going to a Halloween party last year, I did go and buy a steel pipe. Just basically making myself a James Sunderland steel pipe because all you know, for that costume, all I would have to do is go and get one of those green jackets. But I didn't end up going to a party, so I just have a fun steel pipe that I just keep under my bed.
Yeah, for intruders.
Yeah, it's really satisfying to have that thing.
Yeah, I imagine so. I imagine that feels good. Me and my wife likes couples costumes.
Mm-hmm.
We've done it twice. The first time we actually, you know, speaking of what we do in the shadows, we did Nadia and Laszlo.
Nice.
That was real fun. And then this year we are the end of Midsummer. So I am in a bear costume and she has done a really, really good job making a Danny
costume. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I'll show you pictures. We went to a Halloween thing mm-hmm. last weekend.
Please do.
Yeah. I'll shoot you a picture in the Slack.
Mm-hmm. Next one here. Michelle says, I can't stop talking in the Cryptmaster voice. What was the last delightfully stupid thing you two got stuck in your brains?
Cryptmaster voice is pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a good one mm-hmm. For that. God, I miss him.
Yeah. I miss him too.
I just want him back.
He's just a guy.
Yeah. I just want him back. What's a stupid thing. It's been a minute since I've had like a stupid walking around thing.
Yeah.
I like that kind of stuff.
Kind of the same.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have a good answer for this. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I had the Macarena stuck in my head this morning.
That's really stupid. Yeah.
It's real stupid. I don't know where it came from. That's like the only part of it that's weird. Like I had one of those Macarena dreams, I guess. I don't remember it, but the Macarena was operative, I guess. Nolan says, congratulations, you've both just leveled up IRL. If you get a +1 to your actual strength, intelligence, or constitution, which would you choose? Constitution for me.
Constitution, absolutely. Yeah.
I like being alive. I don't like being sick as much as I am. Mm-hmm. I have no use for strength.
Yeah.
I don't think strength is useful.
I think any problem,
a couple jobs.
Any problem that strength would solve for me, constitution, just the ability to endure more, would solve better and have better long-term outcomes for me.
And in terms of intelligence, happy people are, or set, intelligent people aren't happier.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to do anything. Like you get to a certain level and it's like, well, I might know more and be able to do something and maybe you can do something with that. But like, you're just, there's a direct proportion of misery.
Yeah.
With that. I'm not the market for misery. So
my thoughts exactly.
My health. Yeah.
My thoughts exactly on that. Endurance would be the way to go. Mm-hmm. Odysseus asks, what mics are you rocking these days? Sure, Beta 87 A or C. I forget which one. Just a standard vocal mic. Yep. We both use those for the shows here. For my streaming, I use an Ethos Earthworks. It's a good, like really focused condenser mic. Both of these are really good focused condenser mics.
Yep. Cinder Elf asks, what snacks are you bringing to this year's annual Hubie Halloween screening?
Oh, we already did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you missed it. No snacks because that's meant to be a punishment.
Yeah. It's a solemn.
It's a dour affair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Favorite non-popcorn movie snack?
Oh, I have a horrible sweet tooth. Like it would be like gummy bears or something.
Yeah.
Like
Junior Mints. Okay. I like Junior Mints and Snow Caps.
I like a Junior Mint from like a degree of Junior Mints. Like if you had those Junior Mints, I would be overjoyed to have a small handful of Junior Mints.
Yeah.
If I eat an entire box of Junior Mints, the fact that my mouth feels indistinguishable from having eaten an entire tube of toothpaste is really difficult for me to deal with afterwards.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. But I'm a sicko for mint flavored anything.
You ever have a frozen Junior Mint?
Yes, I have. They're really good.
Yeah. Real good. Yeah. Real fun.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. That was you. Finally, we have Trialflight who asks, hi, Kay and Gary. Most and least appetizing video game food. Factors to consider: ingredients involved, method of preparation, where it's found or made, who made it, how fresh it is.
Yeah. This is a stealth. You know how people are constantly trying to get us to play Monster Hunter? This is actually one of those stealth Monster Hunter questions.
This is one of those stealth Monster Hunter questions. It's also like a stealth, get us to say anything nice about Monster Hunter thing. I think people are starved for this.
Yep. Tough shit. It doesn't work for me. I'm teasing. The most appetizing, this is... it's kind of off the top of the dome. I'm sure I could come up with something better than this. But when I played Breath of the Wild, he makes a little pepper stew.
God, that looks so good.
It looks really good. Like meat and then just like hot peppers and just it being tossed in the pan and everything. And like, I know exactly what that would taste like.
Yeah.
That needs seasoning. That needs, you know, that needs things.
Yeah.
It needs moisture. But it looks really good.
Yeah. No. And also like I could make that. I also like, I don't know, the skewers in Breath of the Wild. A lot of food in Breath of the Wild looks really good.
I think so too. Like I got sick of the whole bit of doing it. Like doing that and cooking to like refill my ever flowing health tank.
Yeah. No.
You know, but the element of the food did look good.
Yes. Yeah. Least appetizing, I'm going to say the canned bread from Pathologic.
Okay. That's also something you can get in real life.
I know it is. I don't want to eat it. I don't. The whole thing sounds horrible. I'm sure like those like health drinks in Silent Hill can't be good. But also like just the idea of not even Soviet, just like deprivation farming era canned bread doesn't sound terrible.
I have a different answer than that, but you know what is in the same ballpark as that? Diet sausage from Stalker.
Oh, shit. No.
Right?
No, that's got
like Soviet era. Canned bread was a cutthroat kitchen ingredient once. I was very pleased to find that it's dry.
Yeah. Like, I
would expect anything out of a can to come out wet, but it's dry. My answer is the big spread from Dishonored. Lady Boyle's party. Like that's supposed to be good.
It's all cream deal. Yeah.
It's all cream deal and weird, horrible sea monsters where you can identify every part of them.
Yeah.
I don't like eating food that I can identify the part. mm-hmm. it comes from. And I think a lot of seafood is uncanny.
Yeah.
And stuff. Yeah. In addition to the fact that there is tons of cream deal.
Yes.
Yeah. Jellied whale fat.
Yeah, gross. Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. Kind of a quick one for our topic. Let's get to it. Is this me or you?
This is you.
Yeah. Exotic Minivan asks, what are the scariest games you've ever played? I haven't been as scared as I was the first time I played RE7, and I've been chasing that high ever since.
Yeah. This is tough. Because I play so many horror games, both of us do, but being frightened of a game is not something that is not something that happens to me very often. That is not a brag. I am not really getting in here and saying, yeah, I'm so tough. It's just a matter of like a lot of exposure.
It'd be so weird if you fucking were. Like, oh, I'm not scared of toys. I'm not scared of make-believe. Impressed.
intolerable flex, not just a weird flex. Yeah.
Can I posit an idea? When we were talking about this topic suggestion, can I posit an idea I had about your relationship to horror?
Yes.
I think that it's exposure that makes you not scared, and it's streaming.
Yeah,
like, streaming is whistling in the dark. Like, you're not alone. You are also performing. Like, that has to be an absolutely powerful fear remover.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can, if I'm ever doing something and I'm with somebody else, I'm not scared.
Yeah.
Like, period.
That is a good, there have been games that I've streamed where I was like definitely spooked or discomfited during them. But yeah, like, that does get in the way. If there's any kind of levity at all to what is happening on the screen, that is amplified, and then that overwhelms what is kind of happening in the game.
Somebody can bomb it with levity. Somebody could throw some levity in there at any moment.
Yeah. I do not feel disqualified from answering this question. It does make it hard for me to come up with specific things.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to disqualify you with that or anything.
I know what you were trying.
It's just a thought I had about how I didn't, when I did, I played Hamnesia. I did that for a YouTube thing. And the fact that I was keeping a running commentary made even scary parts just seem funny.
Did you say Hamnesia?
Yeah. Hamnesia. It's Amnesia 2. Mission for Pigs.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. It's called Hamnesia.
sorry, I forgot that was plausibly a thing. Yeah. No. Go ahead.
Scariest thing. A long time ago, my answer was a Half-Life 1 mod called Afraid of Monsters.
Okay.
I don't know if that would still hold up. Mm-hmm. No, that scared me a bunch. Now Resident Evil 7 Basement's really up there for me.
Yeah.
That really got me. And even once I realized, like, I can just leave the door and the guys just dissolve. That has a real atmosphere, and the goopy walls, having that element introduced, that did a lot for me.
And the fact that it just keeps going too, is a big deal. Like, historically, like, the game that has wigged me out the most in the process of playing it was like maybe within the first like two times that I played Silent Hill 3. Mm. That is such a like, on all fronts, just like assault on the senses, you know, just like aesthetically and viscerally, that like it got to the point where like I had to get up and go out of the room in order to like work up the ability to go, the ability to proceed. Same thing with Amnesia, The Dark Descent. Like, historically, you know, just if I'm thinking about my, you know, exposure, being scared alone, kind of deal.
Amnesia is huge.
Yeah.
Like, that invisible water monster's real sea change kind of thing. There's an interesting part too that I think that is kind of a fear remover in not just streaming or having somebody with you, but also doing it for work where I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
I was thinking about like why the Jack sequences in Resident Evil 7 aren't amongst my scariest. Like, it's the ones that were the most like filmic and the most visual. It wasn't a mechanical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because my brain immediately clocked it as what it was mechanically.
Yeah.
Like, this is a pursuit thing. I need to hide. I've done this a bunch. Like, Amnesia 1 did that first, you know, as far as I know, at least the first to do it really big. And that was very effective the first time. But now I just kind of get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Like, a series that has worked for me very well, even streaming, is Outlast.
Mm-hmm.
That has huge elements of pursuit. Also, it's just generally really, really icky, like kind of on all levels.
Yeah.
But like the Whistleblower DLC, like I very nearly like threw up watching that or streaming that because it was so stressful. And like I'm a huge about going to bat for Outlast 2. That really got me on there for both like in-game like it never lets up kind of reasons, and also like subject matter reasons.
It's hard to talk about this without diving into different kinds of fear.
Yeah.
You know, because you're talking about Outlast being really upsetting and you know, having a kind of a subject matter, that is an element of fear.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, another, like the dread of going to the bathtub in Devotion.
Uh-huh.
Like that's a real fear.
Yeah.
You know, it feels a little bit like a gerrymandering answer where it's like, oh, the real fear is cart life, because real life problem is the real problem.
No.
You know, not trying to pull that bullshit, but like that was an intense moment of dread, or going to the attic and Gone Home.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, oh man, gone home. Like even with everything that I had seen, I was still convinced I was going to find bodies up there.
Yeah. You know, and I know I was invested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, really worked. It's not a traditional horror game. What's mm-hmm. really interesting, I love that about Gone Home, is that like the idea that it kind of is creepy while you're just exploring because mm-hmm. you're alone, and people are like, oh, is this a horror game? That becomes its reputation. And then it actually does have this very horrific swerve.
Yeah.
You know, even without getting into like, well, the real horrificness is what happened to the dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we don't need to get into real life shit.
No.
With that. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a game that I played relatively recently that really got me was Mortuary Assistant. Have you seen that?
I've heard that that's real scary.
Yeah, it's like a procedural thing. Like you are doing uncomfortable and kind of realistic, like mortuary body preparation, but also like being on the lookout for signs of demonic possession. And like, there are a bunch of different ways it can go. Mm. So like that has the, you know, a thing that used to be like a much bigger deal for me in survival horror games, which is I'm really trying to do something and focus on something, but I cannot relax. And that amplifies the stress within it. Yeah. That is a good one. Something that would be good as like a double feature kind of thing. Couldn't be a full episode of WoF, but like there is a game called The Exit 8. Have you heard about that? Mm-hmm. The Exit 8 is an anomaly spotting game. I was unfamiliar with these before I played this one. It's just a free game on Steam. You are kind of doing a loop on this mostly featureless subway platform, mm-hmm. Trying to spot things that are wrong or out of place. And it makes you super paranoid because you have to be correct on if there is something wrong or not 8 times in a row, or else you go back to the beginning.
Okay.
So like you ultimately get super just like attuned to every little thing, which makes when it decides to do something to you, it's almost like a screamer. It's like, okay, you know, get real close to the screen and then hitting you.
Yeah. That's cool. That's a cool idea.
So the reason I said like a double feature kind of thing, they adapted that. Like there's a movie of The Exit 8 and I hear it's pretty good.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So like also The Exit 8, like it is a less than 2-hour game. So if you decided to do that for an adaptation decay, like, I don't know, I think you would have a good time with it, at least enough to get the gist and then, see the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Doing the movie for adaptation decay and talking about the game in the same episode makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Perhaps at some point. Mm-hmm. The Faith game is scary to me.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of became a streamer bait kind of thing.
Yeah.
The first time it does its trick.
Okay.
Of switching from like Atari graphics to full rotoscoped
mm-hmm.
Uncanny movement. Like, I think that is really good.
Yeah.
Speaking
of adaptation decay, there is that horror movie that's on Netflix that just straight up ripped off that visual style.
Oh, I didn't see that either. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're eating good for adaptation decay. We got a bunch of stuff
mm-hmm.
coming up in the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hard to think of anything else that it like just really got me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. I've got like endless things here. Like the first Corpse Party game got me. I know that RPG Maker horror stuff is really, you know, difficult because that top-down kind of thing, it's in the descriptions for that mm-hmm. that really get under my skin. Like there's some really fucked up deaths that can happen. And it mm-hmm. is all done through sound and writing. Through the description on that is really good and stressful.
Nice.
And just a general, like any of the Harvester games, Cat Lady, Downfall, Lorelei, and some Burnhouse Lane, that's that style of stuff and the subject matter that they get into. Like it's actually psychological horror. It's neat. Not just we go to a realm horror. Yeah.
Yeah. Or a Flashlight House horror.
Yes.
Like it's about stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the scariest games? Listeners, what are the scariest games you've ever played?
Yeah. Let me know.
Smash that like button. should we do some responses?
Yes. Let's do responses here. You asked that, so I'm going to go with the first mouthwashing response. Malachi says, I feel like one of the horror genre's best qualities is its ability to be a modifier for other genres. Sure, mouthwashing is a horror game, but in my opinion, that's not really what it's about. From my perspective, the game is about the characters dealing with the realities and traumas of their lives. The horror aspects are able to highlight an already compelling story. I do think the times it was trying to actually add gameplay elements were its weakest points. Unrelated, I saw someone online call a PS1 style animation mouthwashing style animation. No, thank you.
Yeah, brutal.
Yeah. Hey, that.
Yeah, no, not crazy. Not great. Yeah. I generally agree with that. Like, yeah. I think it's a horrific story and it would be a horror story even if it didn't have that horror game.
Yeah.
You know, bits mm-hmm. add to it. And the horror game bits, like it felt like everyone was less interested in those.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
agreed. Horror is often a theme put over a bunch of other stuff. It is difficult to describe what a horror game is that is not directly from the Alone in the Dark lineage. Right.
Very much so. And like for me, mechanically horror games like the Alone in the Dark lineage, I like, you know, mm-hmm. the survival horror, but basically an adventure puzzle game. I like, and then I like a pursuit based kind of thing. Like the bunker was really cool.
Yeah.
But usually, other than that, a lot of the times the things that end up being typical horror mechanics outside of those two things, I'm not super crazy about.
Yeah.
Like I might really like the game in spite of it, mm-hmm. but I would definitely say for me, the Alone in the Dark, and that includes Silent Hill, Resident Evil.
Yeah, yeah, that's what
that
I mean.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah, I was saying for the listeners.
Yes,
or in case they were not big Alone in the Dark heads.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, seems like a safe bet.
Probably, yeah. A game that is interesting. That is like it is horror. It, you know, it is kind of a horror story because it's about like puppets gone wrong. Mm-hmm. Have you seen?
Say Five Nights at Freddy.
No, no.
It'd be very funny. Kind of interesting. It's about puppets that have gone wrong.
Yeah, it's yeah. Like these puppets, you know, just to, you think that a Chuck E. Cheese would not be a scary place.
Well, it seems like a place
I would
for
ask
kids.
You to think again. Yeah. My Friendly Neighborhood.
Yeah, I've seen the title for that.
Yeah, yeah. That is a Resident Evil style game that has nothing explicit in it, like gore wise, that would make it objectionable for like a kid. It's like a PG rated survival horror game, but they take a bunch of stuff from like, I don't know, they have a mechanic from Silent Hill 4 in it. Like it is a really studied like exploration of the mechanical aspects of the genre.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah. Same thing with Conscript, actually, which is like the horror of World War I, but there's nothing explicitly horror, at least in the parts that I saw. It's just structured as one.
That My Friendly Neighborhood game really did itself a disservice by looking the way it does, because it looks exactly like streamer bait Five Nights at Freddy shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like I don't know if it's just a marketing or it's just the space is kind of polluted.
Yeah, I think the space is polluted.
Yeah. James says, this is the first time I bought a game in order to play along with the show and was sad that I kind of hated it. But having listened to the episode, I did get some nice parasocial feelings of mutual understanding and really appreciate the context provided. And good episode. Besides the part where the gameplay elements range from pointless busy work, code scanning, cake making, to why are you making me do this? Red light, green light in the cargo hold, the just come kill me phantom graveyard. I really hated that the Steam library page was pushing their fan gamer shop that would sell me a set of lenticular magnets of the crew that I could tilt to ruin or unruin their lives, or the official take responsibility long sleeve tee. Felt like it really cheapened the very serious content of that game that, to me, already felt a little aesthetics first. Learning from the show that the game had that kind of fan base did make that make some more sense to me, and it was nice to know that I wasn't alone in feeling some unease at the style of engagement with this particular content/message.
Yeah.
Having the pop-up for the Fangamer store on the Steam page does feel a little bit gross.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, that's not great. That's not great behavior.
No, yeah. No. And I'm wearing my mouthwashing bracelets right now. Like,
yeah,
it's possible. It's possible for that to be good. And that isn't from the Fangamer shop though. And Fangamer is a company that I like. Their offerings around mouthwashing are not very good.
It's hard to know who to blame for that.
Yeah.
You know, like I never want to begrudge the paycheck of the devs. Like if people, and I want the fans, if they want that t-shirt, to be able to have it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it is just, you know, I think that it is just a symptom of how weird it is people attached to the characters of that rather than the absolutely traumatic thing that happened.
I think that it is downstream of the fan base problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fan base thing is fucking weird. I had to block that Reddit on Reddit.
Oh yeah.
Suggesting it to me.
Yeah.
Nonstop. Like, do you think that Curly, when he lived on Earth, you know, might've been closeted and just, you know, I don't fucking know. Like what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
What are you doing?
Like, any part of. Yeah.
Yeah. What is this? Like, it shouldn't be against the law, but like, what does this contribute to this media?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Too old for that.
Yes. Let's see here. Dylan writes, I had mixed feelings on mouthwashing. On one hand, every aesthetic was completely on point, and the story was a fantastic demonstration of when an ostensibly well-meaning person, Curly, makes horrible decisions. On the other hand, this was a perfect example for me of a game that is better when it isn't trying to be a game. What I wouldn't give for a one-handed critic. As a fan of How Fish is Made, I really like this developer's queasy style. In that game, you play as a fish flopping through a processing plant as other fish extol the values of choosing up or down. There are no puzzles or fail states, just the pure discomfort of you having to choose to see it to the end. In contrast, as mouthwashing tried to be more of a game, like that stupid-ass invisible horse part, which took me around an hour, it actually took me out of the otherwise very distressing walking sim elements because they felt that much more like wireframe set pieces. Oh, I guess it's time for the eyeball corridor. But
here in the eyeball corridor, we shed light on small leftist projects.
But despite not really enjoying my playtime with it, I would absolutely watch mouthwashing the miniseries. And as someone with a history of abuse, I felt that Anya's character was extremely well portrayed as someone who was completely beaten down from always being in protect mode. I hope this game's success inspires game creators to approach these types of adult stories with similar tact.
Yeah, I hope it encourages them to do it without adding the screamer bait.
Yeah.
You know, like I want to see that. I like this, you know, there's a big month for mature stories from mouthwashing to Silent Hill 2 to the most mature story of all, Fear.
Yeah.
you know, in adult situations and stuff.
Yeah.
If you haven't played it, Dylan, the version of that that takes us seriously the entire time is Devotion.
Yeah.
Is a really, really serious story that treats everything really above board. There are a couple little gamey bits.
Mm-hmm.
But barely.
Yeah.
It does not want a YouTuber to scream at it.
Yeah. Devotion remains unconquered.
Yeah. Not beating the allegations of being great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why would it want to?
Yeah. It shouldn't. It's great. Futz, this was a Patreon comment. We usually don't include these because we want people to write in at duckfeed.tv/contact, but this is useful.
Mm-hmm.
Futz says, to slightly explain why mouthwashing became a Tumblr 2024 indie darling, Let's Blame Let's Plays. Key probably already knows this as a horror streamer, but I thought I'd say what I saw is somebody who just barely aged out of the target fandom age. As an older Gen Z, the online horror space since 2025 is predominantly people who aren't playing these games. Or 2015, thank you. Yeah. Predominantly people who aren't playing these games, but watching people play them. Story-rich, short, visual games tend to do well because it's more for the watchers to latch onto. If the watcher gets the story, they can easily jump right into the fandom. Mm-hmm. This is a double-edged sword, as the Let's Play's player's interpretation is going to taint a first impression of the game. Shout out to JackSepticEye, as the 1/6 assigned male at birth Let's Players I watched, who put the pieces together that Anya was sexually assaulted before the curly reveal, which, yikes, most of these people are in their 30s and 40s and didn't get that Jimmy was only apologizing for the crash at the end. Jeez. Didn't get that Jimmy, yeah. Yeah. My memory of mouthwashing at the initial boom on Tumblr was users predominantly 14 to 18 years old getting really into it. I'm not saying this is why it became a fan art, fanfic, alternate universe, what if they kissed darling? Fandom is for everyone. But with how starved modern indie horror short stories-based Let's Plays have been for the last 3 years, it was basically the only game to recommend for 3 months, meaning so many people of this age group saw it. If you liked horror fandom, congratulations, welcome to the mouthwashing zone. So deep story to pull the adults in with an adult twist, plus short runtime, plus one big YouTuber plays it, plus quick growing popularity means Let's Players jump on quick while the iron is hot, plus popular Let's Players with audiences in the 13 to 18 year old range, plus social media becomes people who watched it and not played, equals basically the formula to form a fairly young age group for a fandom.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like in the episode, we talked about like, oh, this might be somebody's first exposure to a game or to like a number of things that would like address this. Mm-hmm. And that being the case, plus the kind of the only people for whom that could be true being young does seem like a way to get there. Like, I didn't get it even as somebody who streams horror games because like, I don't know, all of it, the people who watch me are basically just in the like in the between me and you age group, Gary. Mm-hmm. So like, I didn't have any insight into the, you know, because it's all old heads. I'm not calling your audience old. It's just they're not in the 15 to 20 range, right?
Yeah. It's I think it's it can be tempting to feel weird, and I do feel alienated by not understanding people in the 15 to 20 range. Mm-hmm. I have no business understanding the people in the 15 to 20 range.
No.
And I'm 25 years older, 30 years older than they are. Mm-hmm. Like, we're different, you know, it's okay. Literally different generations. Like, my role is to, you know, be polite and get out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, but it does feel weird to me. But that makes sense. It's useful insight.
It's like, I don't care what happens in that room, but sometimes I accidentally open the door to it.
Yeah. Let's move on to Silent Hill 2 Remake.
Yes. Mark writes, no game has ever made a case for an enemy slider quite like Silent Hill 2. The first time a mannequin was lying in wait perfectly still, only to pounce on the unsuspecting me, was visceral. Genuinely frightening moment. The 100th or so, it became obvious that whoever decided to stretch the length of this game out twofold from the original steered this ship into the iceberg of diminishing returns. Contrast this with the Lakeview Hotel Otherworld in the very same game. The only monsters you found were sick and dying. It's truly a disturbing scene and stuck with me far longer than alternate costume lying figure number 347. Hopefully Bloober course corrects with the Silent Hill 1 remake, so I never have to live in a world where skinless knife children stop freaking me out.
Yeah, agreed.
Agreed. Too much.
Every time a dev makes an area where enemies are non-hostile,
mm-hmm.
An angel gets its wings.
Yes. See, like, also
it's such a good trick.
The end of fear with the puppets with their strings cut.
Yep. It's every time it happens, it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Great trick.
Yeah.
Bobby says, I don't like Bloober's output, but I saw overwhelming surprise and praise for Silent Hill 2 that I thought I'd better check it out for myself. It's definitely the most proficient and playable game that I've played by Bloober, but something was bugging me. It just felt wrong. OG Silent Hill 2 is pretty hard to top for me, so I figured I was just being a cranky old man and tried to take the game on its own terms. But then I reached the end of Angela's story. This works so well in the original game because its metaphors were fairly abstract and understated. We didn't need to chase Angela through a maze of closets and crawl spaces littered with bloodied sheets and teddy bears, finally confronting her father in a room of skin walls throbbing like an orifice. And it would have been a lesser game if we did. It's like a teenager wanted to make their own edgier Silent Hill 2 follow-up, but somehow we're given rein to just remake Silent Hill 2. Bloober are hacks. I won't be returning for the Silent Hill 1 remake.
We'll let them know. Yeah. they listen. I'm probably going to return for the Silent Hill 1 remake because I'm me. But yeah, it's very hard to disagree with this. I think that specifically the Angela stuff, but like any number of things, is like, if you consider it to be a good thing to try to do to make a more direct version of what was unstated in Silent Hill 2, they did a good job at doing that. I preferred when it was understated.
Yeah. Is it a misguided effort?
Yeah. Is it a misguided effort? And like, how much does it count that they did well at what they aimed to do?
Yeah. Like it was what they aimed to do worth doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's also, this makes me think of like Silent Hill 2 Remake's weird relationship with having played the original, where it suffers a lot more if I compare like one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that sequence in the remake because I already knew what had happened with Angela.
Mm-hmm.
So it just had that feeling of like seeing more.
Yeah,
of a thing.
Yeah.
I agree that it makes it worse, you know, but that didn't particularly bother me, largely because I was mostly annoyed by like the enemy padding and the puzzle padding. But like the, you know, it's a better story if they leave that understated 100%. Since I already know it, like, I don't know, I'll see this cool chase sequence with blood walls and shit and scary TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. I want to see I want to see something that's well done.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of both. Like if it's just one or the other, like absolutely.
Yeah.
If it's both, it already fucking exists. I still don't think, I don't like the remake very much. I wouldn't play it, but mm-hmm. If you have to, that I think that's a good part.
Yeah. Somebody coming from the other direction too might go and play the original and say, yeah, I like the understated version now that I've seen the explicit one. Like this is more artful, et cetera. I don't think that the new one ruins it, actually.
No. And somebody also could have a different opinion. They could be like, no, the understated version is too abstract. Mm-hmm. I prefer actually laying it out because it's important to the character, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Nervous writes, in 2015, a one-night performance called Akira Yamaoka Presents Silent Hill Live came to town. Being industrial music nerds, I bought tickets for my partner and I, expecting spooky soundscapes made from banging on sheet metal. Boy, was I nonplussed to find this was Akira Yamaoka playing a flying V guitar alongside a band of session musicians led by a woman who yelled, "Are you ready for some Silent Hill? I can't hear you."
Yay.
I was catfished into a rock concert of every Silent Hill vocal song, mostly post Silent Hill 4, while hired dancers dressed as bobblehead nurses and pyramid head danced suggestively on either side of the stage. It was the most expensive concert I've ever attended, and we left before the end. I realize this has little to do with Silent Hill 2, but I thought you might get some Schadenfreude out of my story.
That's pretty great.
That sounds fucking awful. And also, like, I don't care for the music from like later Silent Hill. Like,
of course you don't.
Homecoming on.
Yeah.
It's all the vocal ones. Like, if it's not Mary Elizabeth McGlynn or whatever her name is, no fucking deal.
Yeah.
Like, it needs to be her doing those vocals. It was just some lady. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds very funny. To me, are you ready for some Silent Hill is very funny. I wish there was a DVD of that so we could adaptation to get it.
I wish that. Oh fuck, man! Don't even say that because somebody's going to bring it to our attention.
Good. I'll watch that concert thing. I want to watch Pyramid Head dancing suggestively on the side of the stage while a song, the worst song you ever heard, plays. Like, I don't know. I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Duffy says, regarding the Silent Hill 2 remake, a thing I realized about the successful Silent Hill games that most of the Western devs seem not to account for is that the mechanics of the town don't really matter. 1 through 4 and F don't have an infrastructure to explain how the town functions or what the Order believes. The only mystery that matters is why your character is there, what drew them there, and whose inner turmoil is on display. That loose, jazz-like narrative that aims to make you feel something more than make you wonder what's the Dastardly Cult up to this time. I think you're right that an anthology approach is the way for this franchise to go. Having little odds and ends, like names and places connect the games, is probably the only identity that can make them Silent Hill. I'm not sure why they need to be Silent Hill branded games otherwise, like you said. I also wanted to let you know that thanks to Real Lich Hours, I've been getting into the World of Darkness. I'm not sure how Bloodlines 2 will go, but it's been neat to immerse myself in the community and learn about the setting. Thanks,
Duffy. Nice. Yeah, thank you. I agree with this. Yeah, the more it gets concerned with a world Bible, and you know, this like that, like that was fun back in like GameFAQs, you know, plot analysis days, mm-hmm. when the creators start doing that specifically as an homage to the original works that were not beholden to that. Then it gets irritating.
Yeah, it smacks of something that is product or IP first. Like they don't have something they want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we need a new Silent Hill game, so we have to look at the things of Silent Hill, not like I have a story I want to tell. Maybe it would work as this.
Yeah. And that's what makes Silent Hill F very compelling to me. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Moving on to Cryptmaster responses. Limerick says, I just wanted to give you a little fun bit from Cryptmaster. I really enjoyed that. For all the same reasons that you two did. I ended up listening to all the entries in the alphabet in the library. And for the J, M, N, and S letters, there was a little story anecdote about each of the characters, J for Joro, etc. And when you go to S for Sin's entry, it says something to the effect of how after her death, she was pardoned for all of her crimes, which were read out in totality in court and took a full 3 days to be read aloud. And all four of your zombie team start laughing heartily. It gave me a good chuckle.
That's real cute.
Yeah. Like listening to all 26 of the entries and that was like too much. I wish I would have thought to go to J, M, N, and S.
Yeah.
But that is a neat thing to hear. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of like bonus content for that is just there that I would probably luxuriate more in if I wasn't doing it for the show.
Yeah.
And if I replay it, I might luxuriate in it.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan says, the first time I opened a chest and got a Feelies puzzle, I thought it was the coolest thing ever. By the 20th time, I was a little less enthused. Cryptmaster is unbelievably fun in small doses, but much of its puzzles are of the same type and caliber dotted around the world map as opposed to increasing complexity or difficulty. Nonetheless, I had a great time taking my heroes Nyxteen, Sinscope, Mazstar, and Joro to the top. Just adding O's to the end of Joro is fucking inspired. That's really good. I really like that.
Yeah.
Even if I ended up treating Cryptmaster more as a toy to mess around with for 20 to 30 minutes a pop rather than longer play sessions. Overall, it's on the positive side of a 7 out of 10 game. I'm sure you all will talk about some of your biggest typing Easter eggs in the episode, which of course is one of the big draws of the game. The two best I found were Breakdance, where the Crypt Dancer says that requires more coordination than any of us can manage, and Cry, where he says we can no longer spare the moisture. Which the developer confirmed to be on Steam was a reference to the all-time classic Lucille Bluth quote from the Conjugal Trailers episode of Arrested Development. Circus Seal moment indeed.
I didn't draw that connection because I love got that one too.
Yeah, that's great. The first part, like it's such a short game.
Yeah.
I couldn't get mad at it for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also didn't necessarily want it to increase in challenge.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think the mechanic supports it.
No.
You know, I don't know what that would look like. You know, you can have more challenging riddles, but a thing about riddles, like after we did Cryptmaster, I was trying to find like a daily riddle app of some kind. And when riddles try to advance in difficulty, they just add steps. The only way to do it is to cryptic up that shit and be like, oh, no, you have to scramble the word.
Yeah. There's also like, should there have been more cryptic crossword stuff like the gravestones in the swamp, you know, and should that have been mandatory, right?
Yeah.
Like this goes up in complexity if you want it to, but like it is what Dillian is asking for. Like that needs to be put into the main path for it to feel like it is part of like something a game should have, which is kind of a curve, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
A curve is something that I want in a more traditional game that I'm playing, at least in part for like challenge reasons.
Yeah.
When I'm playing just to have my pants charmed off.
Yeah.
I was happy with the relatively flat difficulty curve.
Yeah. But like a seven out of 10 game that is a toy to mess around with for 20 or 30 minutes a pop, that just turns it into, I think maybe a little bit how it's even meant to be played. Like you're going to be done in 6 of those. So have fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on to Fear.
Yeah. Callum says, playing Fear at the time it came out, it felt like the conversation was all about the creepy stuff. What stood out to me at the time was how good the gunplay and combat encounters were. Compared to other deep FPS games of the same time, it felt very dynamic and satisfying. I will be interested to see if it holds up.
I think so.
Yeah.
You were still fun.
you were right. You were right to focus on that over the, aesthetic scary stuff. The aesthetic scary stuff boils away. What you're left with is just really, really good shooting.
Yeah. In terms of, standing up.
Yeah.
Like the horror stuff kind of doesn't stand up that well. Mm-hmm. Cinder says, I did not consume a lot of horror media in general when Fear was released, but got swept in by the hype. The latter jump scare would still be on the list of the scariest things that have ever happened to me, were I to make such a list, and had me pissing myself every time I went down a ladder for the rest of the game. That is just oceans of piss.
Yeah.
Even now that almost everything else about the game has left my mind, that scene will still be vivid. Mm-hmm. Still be vivid. Counterpoint to that Fear stuff burning away. The fear elements of this, the scary elements burning away. Mm-hmm. The latter scare is infamous for a reason.
Yeah.
100% agreed with that. It's the one that I remembered in between playthroughs, though. And the other ones, the on fire hallways and walking on the ceiling shit.
Yeah.
I didn't remember.
Yeah. A room that's mostly full of blood is scary the first time.
Yeah.
And if you think about,
it's being all concerts. Yourself.
Yeah.
Like every single concert is that.
Yeah. Weird. You must be going to weird concerts. People who don't agree with the statement Gary said.
Yeah. People contain a lot of blood.
Yeah.
My understanding.
Finishing out here with Sam, who says, I'm the guy who requested Fear. It holds a special place in my favorite games. In my first year of university back in 2009, with no access to a TV and the Uni VPN blocking Steam, my gaming was restricted to a disc copy of Fear and both expansion packs, running at the lowest graphics setting on my laptop with the fan desperately whirring. I played the game to death, and even revisiting it now, a decade and change later, the shooting still holds up. I don't think any game has had a more satisfyingly meaty shotgun. And I love how the combat is fast and frenetic, so the bullet time is actually necessary rather than being gimmicky. Having gotten an office job, what stood out to me this time is how well the game captures an office space where nobody takes any goddamn accountability for anything. There's a project team compiling data, but they have no idea why. A smooth-talking exec trying to make the problem go away, and the one person who tries to fix things ends up fucking everything up worse. Even though the Armisham offices tend to devolve into weird video game spaces, I love being able to find specific people's offices and follow conversations through the answer phones. You'll click the phone, listen, and go, oh, hey, it's this person's office, in a way that's never brought attention to, but I thought it made the world feel more expansive. In case you don't cover the expansion packs, the first one is actually a lot of fun and has some good, creepy set pieces. And the second one has basically no scares and is flat out garbage. Thank you both again for covering Fear. Love listening to your shows. And it's gotten me through some rough patches in my life. I can't wait to hear what you're doing next.
Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I wish those offices had a little personality in them in terms of like decor.
Yeah, it's hard in a post-Prey world.
Yeah, we harped on that, but it's not just me wanting the game to be a different thing. Mm-hmm. Because like ImSims do that.
Yeah.
They're the games that do that. Shooters aren't, but a little bit. You know, like a poster.
Poster or something like that. A lot of copies of Folks with Longo on the cover.
Yeah, I do like Folks magazine, and I love Longo.
Yeah,
that was very good.
And since you're excited to hear what's coming next,
you get to.
Yeah.
So next month that we're announcing is December. That month is we're going to do our winter WRPG, mm-hmm. and we're doing Duckstream.
Yeah,
the thing. Both of which we're announcing. Duckstream, save the date. It's going to be the second weekend.
Okay.
In December on the 12th. Cool.
Awesome. Yeah. So 48 hours streaming.
You reacted to that like we didn't talk about it in the green room.
I wasn't sure. Because I knew it wasn't going to be the first one. I wasn't sure if it was going to be the second or third.
The third one goes right up to Christmas, though. We never do stuff like right before, like Christmas Eve.
Okay.
So the second weekend, 12th.
Okay, cool. Be sure to save the date. The specific charity is we're still working that out. We are down to a couple of candidates. We just want to do some final looking to make sure we're comfortable with who we raise money for.
It's a really silly, not silly, but it's a very absurd like ethical calculus.
Yeah.
Because most of these charities are on the up and up. There are tons of them that are on the up and up. Mm-hmm. The issue is finding something where they're easy enough to where you can like maximize people's ability to donate and like what feels good to donate.
Yeah.
To, you know, like right now, like what fire feels like it needs the most putting out.
Yes.
So yeah. We're doing that. We'll announce that very soon, though. I know that some people need to know. Mm-hmm. Winter WRPG, that's going to be Wasteland 3.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool ass game.
Yeah. I have not played it. Gary, I know, has. If I know this is a comedy question. If I haven't played the first two, will I be lost or am I just walking into it's kind of Fallout, but not?
You really have to play Wasteland 1 a few times.
Okay.
And don't do the remake. You have to do the original.
Okay. So, all right. Well, I better get started now then. Yeah.
Yeah. Just kidding. It's Fallout, but not. Mm-hmm. The tone is the biggest, for everyone who's going to play it, the tone is the biggest thing to get past. Mm-hmm. It's silly. Fallout can be silly. This is sillier. And it opens with a foot that will leave a bad taste in your mouth, I feel like.
Okay.
Keep with it. There are some genuinely funny things in it. It just kind of opens with some jokes that don't land.
Yeah.
And mechanically it's what, you know, it's awesome. It's Shadowrun Returns basically. You switch into grid-based combat.
Nice.
Tactical combat when fights happen. It's cool. Cool powers. Yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be three episodes covering the base game. Gary is going to talk a little bit about the DLCs. When it would make sense to, the third episode that is not going to be premium. The premium is going to be recording from our panel, the 7 out of 10 panel we did.
Yeah, at Portland Retro Gaming Expos, that'll be a treat for everyone. It features the Retronauts.
Yes,
basically getting equal time, so it's kind of a co-episode.
Yeah,
yeah, So we're gonna put that out for our patrons at $5 and up a month. Keep an eye on the Patreon space. We might do some changes. Nothing scary. And everything. We're coming near the end of the year. We like to do that kind of thing, perhaps.
Yeah. If you have thoughts about Wasteland, write in by the 15th of December. If you have thoughts about November's games, which are Monster Train 2, Unpacking, or Hitman Blood Money, the deadline is the 15th of November. For all of those, go to duckfeed.tv/contact and write in. Please separate your responses into multiple responses if you are going to talk about multiple games.
Yeah. We really appreciate everyone who supports us on Patreon. We appreciate, everybody who has left us a rating or review anywhere. Mm-hmm. All that stuff helps. We would, per our question earlier in the episode, like we're trying not, we're not chasing trends. I wouldn't know how to do it if we're going to try to get on TikTok and get people to like really dig us. Mm-hmm. But we really want, we really appreciate people who do, and we rely on you to spread the word.
Yes. So please.
It's a big deal. Thanks to everybody we met at Portland Retro Gaming Expo.
It was a good time.
Good time. Good to see you. Mm-hmm. Everyone was cool. Yeah. Everyone's nice. Everyone always is.
Yeah.
It's nice. Thank you.
Very much so. Thank you. Other stuff. Since this is coming out this week, that food pantry or the garden.
Right now. If you head on over to, so this is a shout out we did. We usually don't do shout outs on premium episodes or dispatches, but this is time sensitive. Listener Zoe and her friends are doing a food drive. So if you go to B as in boy, D as in dog, 4 P as in Peter, P as in Peter.com, and you can check it out. This is going to be on November 8th, starting at 8 a.m. It's going to be a big fundraising stream the whole day straight. Come check it out.
Yeah.
It's going to be real good and it's for worthy causes.
Yeah. BD4PP.com. Or just do a search for BD4PP. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'd really encourage you to do that. Yeah. And we'd encourage you to join us in thanking Gwen, our producer.
Thank you, Gwen.
Just got back from a successful fest, is my understanding. Nice. Had a great time. That's our girl.
Yeah. And I guess that's it. We will see you next week with Monster Train 2.
Mm-hmm.